Okay, today's daf is daf kaf. We're going to start at the bottom of Yud Tet Amud Bet. Okay, Tana Rabbanan, five lines from the bottom, the two dafs. We're still in the context of all these documents you find, lost documents, what you do with them, can you return them or not? Matzah Shovar, he finds a receipt that says that a husband paid the ketubah to the woman. Question is, again, did the husband pay it? Or did he just write up a document, right? In other words, if the husband paid it, then the woman should have been watching it. And if she dropped it, well, then it's, you know, we don't know. Did she drop it? Or did he never give it to her? Meaning he never really paid the ketubah. So, I'm sorry, the husband would be keeping it. Sorry, not the wife, my confusion. The husband would keep it, and as the wife would have written the shovar to say, I received my money, and he would keep it as proof that he paid in case she ever says, oh, give me my ketubah money. He'd say, I already paid you, and here's my shofar. So the fact that he lost it, you know, would mean maybe he paid it and he lost it, or maybe it was lost before she had it written up, but he never actually paid it. So bizman shaisha moda, if she admits that it was paid, so then yachzir labal. Ein haisha moda, if she doesn't admit that it was paid, then lo yachzir lo lezeh ve lo lezeh. Okay, because then, right, presumably we don't know, was it paid back or not. Bizman shaisha moda, now we're going to derive something from here. Mihat yachzir labal. We're going to actually question this, right? What does this say here? It says that when the woman admits it, we can return it to the husband. But lichush, why aren't we concerned? The dilma katvali tem benisan velo natnala ad tishrei. Maybe, okay, now we're going to describe a weird situation that might have occurred. She wrote the shofar in Nisan, but actually he didn't pay her back till 6 months later in Tishrei. In the meanwhile, before the ketubah got paid back, what does she do? She wrote it assuming he was going to pay her back, but then he didn't pay her back. And somehow she lost it, I guess, because she figured it wasn't a valid document anyway. And then, az la zvanta l'ktubata b'tovat hana'a minisan vad tishrei. Then, oh, actually, she didn't lose it yet, sorry. She still has it in her hands. Then, she sells the ketubah for tovat hana'a. If you remember what that is, it's the, okay, we learned this a long, long time ago, so it's good review. A ketubah means that if, in the event, the husband dies, or before the wife, or the wife, or he divorces the wife, she can get money based on this document. Now, if she dies first, or never gets divorced, then she doesn't get the money. So she can sell her ketubah to someone else, which basically means that that person will be able to get the ketubah money if the husband dies or divorces the woman. In other words, in the event that, right, she sells it now, she doesn't know if she's going to get divorced or her husband's going to die before her. But what does she say? Well, this is worth money. I need money right now. I'm strapped for cash. So what am I going to do? I'm going to sell the rights of this food. Now, the tube is worth, let's say, 200 zuz. Forget about a tosefet. Okay? Let's say it's worth 200 zuz. She'll sell it for maybe 100, 120. In other words, someone will buy it for less money because he's got the money now in the hopes that he'll get 200 zuz later. Right? It's in his best interest. However, it's a risk because maybe it'll never actually happen. So she sells it. That's called tovat hana'ah. Okay? Because it's not actual value. It's value of possible future benefit that he will get if in that event. So now, let's start back, okay? We find this receipt that the ketubah was paid back. It's written out for according to this, for Nisan, right? It's usually that direction. Mm-hmm. Right. It's written out for Nisan. We don't know, though, right? We find it on the street. The question is, maybe it was actually used, but maybe it was used later. In other words, maybe it wasn't used till Tishrei when he actually paid it back. And before Tishrei, let's say in Iyar, she sells her ketubah to somebody else. Okay, so now what would happen? The tovat hana'ah minisan v'ad Tishrei umapik leil shovar dichtiv b'nisan, and now she's going to take out this shovar that she sells at some point between Nisan and Tishrei. So let's say Iyar. Then she takes out the shofar when she actually does get paid back. So now she gives the shofar to the husband, right? And now he can take out the shofar and say to the people who took the land, right? Atat lemitrof lekuchot shelo kedin. He could say to the person who bought it, oh, you bought nothing, right? You thought you were buying a potential ketubah. As he does divorce her 6 months down the road. However, they can play a trick, sort of, to get whatever back. You know, or in this case, it's a little strange. Uses of Achal Mitchav Lekucho Chalokadin, and there's a bit of a difference of opinion. It sounds like they never actually got their land. It's not like we're going to take it away from them. It's that when they go to collect on this ketubah now, they say, "Oh, what are you talking about? I have a shofar that I already paid up the ketubah in Nisan. In which case, you guys don't get anything." Okay, and that's a way that the husband and wife, even though now they're divorced, but they can sort of keep the property in their own hands and not give it to the other guy. Okay, Shmamina. Okay, so now, what's the story here? Right, so that's the whole question is, so now we have this question, how can we return the shofar, even if the woman admits it? Maybe the woman's on the side of the husband and they're conspiring here. And maybe she really sold the ketubah rights and this really isn't hers, and she's just trying to play a game here. So now, how can you say then in the Braita that b'zman she'isha moda, you can be chozer? Remember, the whole concern, again, not always, but one of the concerns that we have in this, and that's one of the concerns we have when we find this thing is maybe it was paid already. Another concern we have is maybe there's some conspiracy going on between the two sides. So shmamina itali d'shmuel, we can infer from here that we hold like Shmuel, d'amar Shmuel hamocher shtar l'chaveiro, b'chazar u'machalo machul. If you have a shtar chov, you have a document that says, you know, someone owes you money. You sell it to somebody else. Okay, remember, we've talked about this also. You sell it, right? The person will buy it for a little less money because he still has to collect it. It's a bit of a headache and maybe he'll never get the money. But he's willing to buy it for the hopes that he's going to get the full amount down the road. But let's say the malve, who now no longer has this document, decides, oh, you don't need to pay me back. He can be mochel, that shtar, even if he's already sold it, okay? It's machul, and even his yorshim can be mochel it. So here you see, that's what Shmuel holds. Here you see the woman also has rights to be mochel her ketubah, because what's happening here, it's in essence, if she pulls out, if she admits that this shofar, that she was really paid her ketubah, and it says Nisan, where really it was Tishrei, which he's basically saying is, I don't need you to pay back my ketubah. And if she's saying, I don't need you to pay my ketubah, right? It's as if you paid me back, even though she sold it in the interim, right? What does Shmuel say? Even if she's mochalit, even if someone else already bought rights to the shtar, the mechila is a good mechila, and she can cancel the loan, okay? Or in this case, it's not exactly a loan. Okay, that's what Shmuel says, and that's one answer. But Abai Amar, afilu tema leita lidi Shmuel, even if you say you don't agree with Shmuel, okay, Shmuel is a difficult halacha, because if you no longer have the loan anymore, it's not owed to you, what rights do you have to be mochalit? It's obviously a bit of a controversial halacha. So Abai says, no, I can explain it even if we don't agree with Shmuel about this. Hacha b'mayaskinan, b'sheshtar ketubah yotze mitachat yada. It's only in a case where she can produce the ketubah. In other words, what happens? We find this shofar on the street. The shofar is supposed to go back to the husband. It's his proof that he paid the ketubah. And when can we... Now, what's the concern? The concern is maybe she sold the ketubah to somebody else. Well, that's only a concern if she can't produce the ketubah. But if she can produce a copy of the ketubah, she's like, ah, here's my ketubah, right? Then clearly she didn't sell her ketubah. Well, maybe, maybe not. Right now we're going to assume, Abaye says, clearly if she pulls out her ketubah, it means she didn't sell it. In which case, if she pulls out her ketubah and we find a shofar on the road that says it was paid, okay, presumably she doesn't rip up the ketubah, right? In other words, we've talked about before, when people owe money, usually the other side makes sure to rip it. Okay, in this case, they didn't rip it, obviously, because they wrote the shofar. The shofar is in place of ripping it. Remember, those are two methods upon which you can prove that it was paid. Either you rip it, or you have a receipt that you paid. In this case, they didn't rip it. So if she can produce a ketubah, then we're not worried that she sold a ketubah to somebody else. Seems to make a lot of sense. But Rava disagrees. Rava amar, im shum shtar ketubah, chayshina l'shtei ketubot. We might have a concern that what? That maybe she had two ketubot for some reason. Now, why she would have two ketubot, I'm not exactly sure. But maybe, you have to remember, a ketubah, if you lose your ketubah, you have to replace it with another one. So it could be, right, how many times does it happen where you lose something and then you find it? So maybe, you know, maybe there's a concern that she had two ketubot, in which case she sold one of them, found the other one maybe that she lost, And then the fact that she produced the ketubah doesn't prove anything. V'abaye amar chada l'shtei ketubot lo cheshinan. And Abaye disagrees with Rava on two counts. One, he says, l'shtei ketubot lo cheshinan. We are not concerned. That's a very rare case that a woman would have two ketubot. Therefore, if we find a shofar on the street and the woman produces her ketubah, we assume she was actually paid back the money and she didn't sell her ketubah to somebody else. And secondly, shovar bizmano tarif. People don't generally write a shovar when they're not actually getting the money back. In other words, a shovar is written at the time that it's not the kind of thing people write in advance. Okay, and Abaye letame, and this dafka matches Abaye's sheet, if you remember, we saw this before. Tamar edav v'chatumav zachin lo. Right, once there's edim signed on something, that makes the document a valid document starting from that moment. So therefore, his assumption is no one's going to write a shovar unless it's actually paid. Why would the woman prepare a shovar saying it's paid, sign witnesses on it if it wasn't actually paid to her, right? He says that wouldn't happen. Okay. Now we're going to move on to a category of shtarot that we find. Okay, this is the last mission in the perek. That there's no concern of any of these issues. Again, what are the issues? Number one, it was paid back already, and therefore we're going to have a double payment, or that there's some sort of conspiracy going on. Okay, these are going to be shtarot that are removed from that whole categorization. Matza igrot shum, v'igrot mazon. Okay, let's start one by one. Igrot shum, there's a few different interpretations. We'll go by Rashi. Rashi says that the baiting comes and they evaluate the nechse love lamalva bechovo. In other words, they say, this is the amount of money that this land is worth in order to connect it to a debt that he owes to somebody. Some of the Mepharshim say this is exactly like a chaltata that we saw. Remember that shtar chaltata, which says this land basically belongs to, it's a foreclosure. Okay? They say the difference between a chaltata and an igrot shum, again, there's a bunch of different interpretations of igrot shum, so I'm going with one of them. You have to remember, I was thinking about it the other day, that when we learn Gemara and I teach you something, we're learning it in such a way that we kind of go through it quickly, and I might give one, sometimes I try to give alternate interpretations, but there's often so many different interpretations of one sentence in the Gemara. So, you know, you might see in your commentary it says something different, and that happens a lot because there's many different interpretations always for almost everything. But anyway, that's just an aside. But what they say that one of the differences, one of the Mepharshim say, is that in Igrot Shum they do, I have to remember now, with the Lova there, I think, and the Chaltata they do without the Lova there, or vice versa. One of them is in front of the Lova, and one is then where the Lova is not there, and they just assess his land and say this, you know, they foreclose on his property without him being there. So why is this not an issue? Because again, it's like the Chaltata, where it's basically saying this land belongs to the Malva, so there's no concern of double payment. It's basically saying this is the value of the land, and that matches the value of the loan, and therefore it belongs to the Malva. Igrot Mazon are that he accepts upon himself to, we saw this in Ketubot, that a woman might get married from a second marriage, and she has children from her first marriage, and she has the husband commit that he's going to pay mizonot for the children. Again, there's no concern of double payment. Mizonot is an ongoing payment. Shtarei chalitza, okay, a woman, if she does a chalitza, she needs a shtar, she gets a shtar after that proves, you know, that says chalitza was done to this woman. What is chalitza? Remember, the woman is married to a guy who dies without children, and she's supposed to marry the brother. The brother doesn't want to marry her, so they do the tekas chalitza, and then she gets a shtar that says she's now allowed to marry other people because until she does chalitza or yibum, she's not allowed to marry anybody else.
Yibum, she still can't.
What?
Yibum, she still can't.
What do you mean, but yibum?
Right. She can't marry anybody else if she does yibum. She's married to him.
Oh, right, that's true. Right. She needs chalitza in order to be allowed to marry someone else. Umiunin. What is miyuni? Right, so obviously there's no concern for anything, right? She's either proving she's a chalutza or she's not. Once you get that, there's no concern that it gets lost and someone's going to use it for some other purpose or, okay, miyunim. What's miyunim? Okay, miyun. Okay, this is all good chazar for all the stuff we learned in Ketubot. Okay, there's a woman, a minor, who gets married off by, her father's not alive anymore, she gets married off by the brother or the mother, in which case the kiddushin is only derabanan. When she becomes closer to of age, there's a certain time frame where she's allowed to say, I don't want to be married to this guy that you betrothed me to. Okay, so she can cancel the betrothal just by saying, I'm not interested, right? She doesn't need a get, she doesn't need anything else. Just by saying it, that's enough. So she has a shtar that says, I did miyun, which means, again, she needs it to prove that she's not married, that she can get married to somebody else. Ushtarei berurin. Okay, we're going to get to this in the Gemara, so we're going to hold off on this for right now. V'chol ma'aseh beitin, this is the line that we've been quoting a lot. And any ma'aseh beitin, okay, right? Like if a beitin gives an ishur to it or something where it's clear that it happened, or we explained it in other ways also, like a ketubah, which is a ma'aseh beitin, harei ze yechzir. Okay, those can go back. Matzah b'chafisa, because clearly, right, there's no concern that this didn't happen and, you know, he changed his mind or he didn't give the shtar in the end. Right, I forgot to mention, that was another concern, right? Not just pure own, but maybe he wrote it to lend someone the money and then he decided not to lend him the money, or he wrote a gift and then he decided not to. But if he already had the signature of the beitin, then obviously he did. Matzah b'chafisa b'dluskama. Okay, this is a good intro to next parak. He finds it in a particular way, okay? He finds the shtar not just loose on the street, floating about, blowing in the wind, but he finds it inside some sort of container. We're going to see what this is. Okay, there are two types of kelim, some sort of vessel he finds it. We'll see in the Gemara what the differences are. Tachrich shel shtarot o aguda shel shtarot. Again, we're going to see in the Gemara what this is exactly, but if it's some sort of bundle or roll of... Okay, the tachrich would be a roll and an aguda would be a bundle of documents together. Hareza yechzir. Okay, then the assumption is it wasn't just one loose shtar. He had a whole bunch of shtarot. It must have fallen from him. So you can return it. Then also, what do? We return it. This is our intro to next parak with simanim. In other words, he says, oh, I had a bundle of. We'll see in the Gemara. They're going to say, you have to say how many shtarot you had and what did it look like? How was it put together? Hareza yechzir. V'kama aguda shel shtarot. How many shtarot would be considered an aguda? Shlosha. Okay, we'll see in the Gemara why two would not be good enough. It has to be three. Shlosha kshurin ze bazeh. Okay, it would be three shtarot tied up together. Okay, we'll see later in the Gemara what exactly tied up means. Rashba gomer, echad halovemi shlosha. Let's say you have one guy, three shtarot, one guy who borrowed from three different people. Okay, so you find these three documents together. There were IOUs, you know, of one guy to three people. So who do they belong to, obviously? Yachzir la love. Right, then it's obvious that these belong to the love, and he must have paid them back, and they're his. Because otherwise, why would you have three shtarot borrowed all by the same guy together? Right, it couldn't have fallen. It wasn't bimikre that this malveh, that malveh, and that malveh, right? Three different lenders all lost the shtarot, and they all happened to get together, you know, be together in one place. It seems like a weird coincidence that, let's say, I borrowed money from three of you, and each three of you dropped your shtar, and they ended up being all together in the middle of the street. That seems bizarre. Must be I dropped them. And now, obviously, the reverse. Shlosha halovin min ha'achad. Right, you see three different people borrowed from one person, three different shtarot. Obviously, yachzir la malveh. Those obviously fell from the malveh. Matzah shtar bein shtarotav. Let's say you find a document among your documents. Okay, now we'll see in a minute what this is. Okay, there's a few different interpretations. Ve'eino yodea mativo. And you don't know what it's doing here. Okay, what it is, like what, not exactly what it's doing here, but you don't know what the situation is. Okay, we're going to talk about this in a second. Yehe munach ad sheyavo Eliyahu. Okay, you have to leave this till Eliyahu comes. Okay, so now the assumption that Rashi says, okay, again, these different interpretations, I'll stick with Rashi for now. This is talking about where somebody gave his shtarot to somebody to watch. Okay, so now this guy finds, okay, let's say he's a guy who watches, you know, keeps people's important documents, okay? It's like almost like a bank for money. So it's a guy who keeps in charge of people's documents. You could see maybe a lawyer would do that kind of a thing and be in charge of people's documents. And what does he have out? A document of a loan. And he doesn't know, did it come from the lover? Did it come from the malveh? If it came from the lover, that means he was holding it to show I paid it. And if it came from the malveh, he was holding it to say I didn't get paid yet. So he doesn't know mativo. So since he doesn't remember who gave it to him. Okay, so what do we say? We leave it ad shevo Eliyahu, since we don't know what the situation is with the shtar. Okay. The other option is, right, Rashi says also, this is a good interpretation to bring, It could be, Rashi says this is a case with a shalish. Not everybody agrees that it's a case with a shalish, but let's assume it's with a shalish. That means like a middle person. That's why he's called a shalish, like a third person. So he ends up with the shtar. Some people say that the reason why they gave him the shtar is because it was half paid. Okay? In other words, what do you do? If you pay half a loan, so you can't rip the shtar because you're still owed half, but you also can't leave the shtar whole because then you're going to think it's not paid back at all. So what do? You put it in someone's hands, a third party, and they're responsible because everybody trusts that person. So therefore, they're responsible to say, oh, it was half paid. But since he finds and he doesn't really remember what the situation is, we basically say we're going to have to leave it, and we don't return it to either one of them. Okay. Obviously, he wasn't the best person to have left it in his hands if he can't keep track of what happened with him. Im yeshi mahem simponot. Okay, this is a shtar that was paid. Okay, it's like a shovar. Okay, it's called a simpon. I'm trying to remember what if there's a real difference between it. Right, it's some sort of like a Kabbalah type of thing. Okay, that it was paid, and you find im if. Okay, so what does this mean? Im yesh imahen. Some people say im yesh imo. Okay, this means that if somebody finds between his shtarot, like all of a sudden he finds this, a simpon, sorry, Rashi says, it's a shovar shenichtav alacha mishtarotav. It was written on the shtar itself. So if, let's say we have a loan, right? What did we say? You can either write a Kabbalah, right? You can write a receipt. You can rip it. Now we're going to learn that there's another method. You can write at the bottom of the shtar or somewhere on the shtar, paid, right? This you do all the time, right? You have a receipt from a store and then they stamp paid, okay? So that's a simpon. So now we say, yaseh mashab a simponot. So whatever it says on the simpon, we can trust, okay? We can assume that that was really what happened, okay? And therefore, we're not worried. Since it's not a separate thing, it's pretty obvious that nobody would write on the shtar itself paid if it wasn't really paid, right? That would be ridiculous. Okay, now we're going to go back and understand a bunch of these cases. My shtarei beirurin. Okay, what is this? Hachatir gemu. Here they translated. Here usually means in Bavel as opposed to Eretz Yisrael. Shtarei ta'anata. Okay, what's shtarei ta'anata? That's a shtar where they write down this what each, right, this is like a transcript of the batei din. You know, what happened? What each person said? Why did they write what each person said? So that no one could change their mind, basically. So they wanted to have it transcribed. So that, obviously, whatever everybody wrote, there's no value to if you lose it. There's obviously no concern. What's going to happen? Someone's going to use it for other purposes, right? Therefore, if you find it, it's obviously valid. Rabbi Yirmiyah Amar, oh, it's not Shtar, that's not what Shtar Beirurin is. Shtar Beirurin is like, okay, we'll get to this in Sanhedrin. Amar, Zeborer Lo'achad, Zeborer Lo'achad. Okay, the third parak of Sanhedrin is all about, we'll get to this, a Beit Din of Borurin. Okay, this is like an arbitration court. Okay, we'll see the different interpretations. Some people say there were regular courts and there were arbitration courts. Okay, and when you go to a regular court, so there's judges who are sitting there. If you go to an arbitration court, how does it work? You each get to choose your judges. Okay? Again, we'll see different interpretations of the Mishnah there without getting into everything there, but let's take the basic, okay? One guy chooses one judge, one guy chooses the other judge, and then together they choose the third, or together the judges choose the third, okay? Unclear whether it's each side chooses the third together, but what's a shtar beirurin? It's the list of the dayanim that they were willing to be borer. In other words, it's each guy has someone on their side, basically. So again, they have a list so that what won't happen? They'll start the judgment. There's actually a machloket about this, at what point they can change their mind about the name, you know, who they chose. Can they, let's say you choose a guy and then he starts going against you. So can you try to say, oh, I didn't want that guy, you know, and then they say, well, look, here's your starbarian. You said that guy. So then you're stuck. Okay. But, so there's a question about whether they mean you can only, to what point can you even cancel? Is there an option to cancel? Some people say it's before the judgment starts, which makes a lot more sense than to say once the judgment starts already. Anyway, that's the issue about using it to in case the guy's trying to renege. Okay, next thing. Now we're going to repeat what we saw in Daf Yudchet. Hahu gita de ishtakach beidina de rapuna de havakate be b'shvirei mata de al rechis nahara. There was a get that they found that came. It was found by the Beit Din of Rav Huna, and it said in it, it was done in the city of Shviri that sat on the Nahar Rachis. Amar Rav Huna, Chashina L'Shnei Shvi, right? Rav Huna said, maybe we should be Choshesh. There's two places by the same name. Amar L'Rav Chista, L'Rabba, Puk Ayin, right? Rav Chista says to Rabbi, you remember this? Go look into the issue, to or to buy L'Rav Huna, because Rav Huna is going to ask you about this in the evening. Rav Huna Minach, from you. Nafak, Dach, V'Eshkach, okay, he went out, he looked into it, and he found this Mishnah, Ditnan, Kol Maaseh Beit Din, Hareze Yachzir. So he said, we can be Machzir the Shtar based on this. Okay, now we're going to see that the story actually went on. Okay, we didn't get to hear the end of the story. Very interesting end to the story. So we see from here, right, a koma sebeitin, right? This is a ketubah. We're going to allow this to go back, and they can. We don't have to worry about these shnei shvirim. So Amar le Rav Amram le Rabba, hechi pasha mari sura mi mamona. Rav Amram says to Rabba, how did you take a case about a maas sebeitin, which is a dine mamonot issue, that whole, right, the Mishnah was talking about, Shtarot of Dine Mamono. And how did you learn out from this to Isur Beheter, right? You're talking about, some people say that really what he's trying to say is you're going to be Mater Eish at Eish. Like, that's a serious issue, okay? Not necessarily that it's so much the difference between Isur Beheter or Mamono, or maybe, and that's one way of looking at it, Isur Beheter versus Dine Mamono, which in general, we make distinctions there. Or we're saying you're Mater Eish at Eish if you're going to, you know, go by this and be go over the ketubah and basically assume. Right, I mean, the truth is it's a, right, sorry, it was a get, not a ketubah, right. So we're going to say, we're going to validate this get and assume she received the get. We don't even know. Right, how are you going to do this? So Amar Le, Rabba says back to him, Tirda, okay? Tirda, a few different interpretations, either which way he's saying, you idiot, you know,
nice.
Silly person, you, okay, some sort of insult. Shtare chalitza umiyunim tnan. What do you mean? Go look back at the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? One of the things, right, two of the things listed there also have to relate to Isur Beheter. You find a shtar chalitza on the street. You find shtar miyun, right? You're allowed to give it to back to the person. Likewise here, we found a get. What's the difference, right? What were you talking about? Here's where the story gets interesting. Paka arza debei rav. Okay? All of a sudden, a beam in the Beit Midrash cracked. Okay, a beam, right? I mean, you can see the image of it, right? The thing that's holding up the Beit Midrash falls, which means, you know, the yisodot of the Beit Midrash are getting shaky. Okay? So, again, different interpretations how you can read this. I'll give you my reading of it. Mar amar mishum l'tai didi paka. Okay, one says it's because of my mazal that this erupted because, okay, so that's each one, okay, the way I read this, each one is blaming the other one. In other words, it's because you're a mizalzelbi, you know, that Rav Amram says to Rabba, you know, what, you call me a stupid name, you know, you call me an insult in the Beit Midrash. How could you do that? Umar Amar, mishum l'tai didi paka. No, it was my mazal because you insulted me. You know, you asked a question in the Beit Midrash, first of all, a bad question, and you tried to discredit what I said in front of everybody, you know, and you embarrassed me. So here I was thinking about that, you know, people always say you have to be careful what you say, you know, and part of the problem when you say things is that you don't think about what it's doing to the other person. You know, and that each one's saying, look what you did to me, but they're not looking at what they did to the other person, right? Each one's kind of saying, like, you see things through your eyes. So through his eyes, you know, I was embarrassed, I was humiliated, you know, but they don't see that they humiliated the other person. You know, everyone's kind of looking at it from their perspective. And that this story is telling you, you know, you have to look at how other people are going to feel when you say what you say and how they're going to react to it. That's my reading of it. Okay. Matzava chasifa b'dluskema. Okay, so now you find it in some sort of package. So my chafisa, or some sort of kli. What's a chafisa? I'm a rabbi barbachana, chamat ktana. We saw these before. They're like a canteen type of thing that they made out of usually animal skin. Okay, so he had a little, you know, canteen type thing, and you found the shtarot in there. So again, obviously, someone could find, say, oh, with simanim, oh, I put it in that canteen, or I don't know what the word they use in the English there.
Skin bottle.
Okay. My dluskama, I'm a rabbi barchana, tlika desabe. Okay, this is a thing that older people use to put their stuff. Okay, so one of the first said so that they don't forget where they put their things, you know, they put them in some little box, you know, some little container where they keep important things. I was thinking of, you know, pills that,
you know, day, yes.
Right, yeah, you need those day pills. Okay, so anyway, some sort of package. Tachrich shel shtarot o agudah shel shtarot. Tana rabbanan. Kama hu tachrich shel shtarot? How many does it make? Makes a tachrich? Shlosha kruchin zebaze. Three of them rolled up. Bekama hi agudah shel shtarot? Shlosha kshurin zebaze. Three of them tied up. Shmat mina, what can we infer from here? Now, this is something we're going to see later on in the next parak. The kesher siman. That if you tie it up, you can use the fact that it's tied as a siman to say, oh, I tied them with a blue ribbon. Now, you know, that's mine. I think, if I remember correctly, we'll see when we get there, but I think it's a bit of a debate whether just saying it's tied is enough, or do you describe how it's tied and that is your siman. So now they say, well, wait a minute. Hatani Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya taught about this Mishnah. Shlosha kruchin zebaze. He explained that an agudah is three kruchin zebaze, rolled up within each other. So they say, wait. Which means what? That you can't learn anything here about a kesher. It has nothing to do with kesher. This is rolled up. So, but if you say it's rolled up, what's the obvious problem? Yihachi hainu tachrich. Right? Because what did we just say? There's a tachrich and there's an agudah. So first we said tachrich is rolled up, agudah is tied up, and that proves kesher siman. But now we have a source, a very early source of Rabbi Chiya, who's living in the time of the Tanaim, and he explained on this Mishnah that an agudah is also rolled up. So now obviously we're going to have to say, well, what's the difference between rolled up called tachrich and rolled up called agudah? Tachrich kol chavecha berosha dechavrei. I forgot to bring papers here. I wanted to show you this. But anyway, a tachrich, I think I can explain it pretty easily, is each one is rolled up, like you start with one piece, and then when you get to the end of one piece, you start the next piece of paper. When you get to the end of that, you start the next piece, and then you roll it all up. Okay? So that when they're rolled, okay, they're not rolled. I think often, maybe, like garbage bags are rolled up like that. Right,
yeah,
where you take out a garbage bag, right, and you're only taking out the first one, and then, right, only when you unroll it does the next one start to unroll, or like a tissue, the way the tissues are wrapped up. That's like a, okay, they're not exactly rolled though. The garbage bag is much better. Exactly. The other one is rolled up the way you would think, where they're all three papers lined up together, and then you roll. Okay, so either which way they're rolled, it's just a matter of a different type of roll. That's how they explain the difference. Okay.
What's the naf? Did they discuss the naftamina?
No, it's just saying those are two different ways, but what's the naf? Well, why is it important? Because when you give your siman, you have to say, I rolled them up like an agudah, or I rolled them up like a tachrich. That's what you would do. So tachrich kol chavecha berasha dechavre. Each one is, right, the end of one, the tail of one is where the beginning one, next one starts. Agudah de rami ahudah de ukruchot. Right, you put them all together and then you roll them. My machriz, now when you announce, what's the story? Okay, again, they're assuming you know all these halachot from Elul Mitzvah, which we don't yet know, but one of the laws of Elam, you know, finding things is you have to make an announcement. I found something. So what do you say you found? You don't want to give away too much information, basically. So, minyan. So then you say, right, your machriz. If you're going to say your machriz minyan, I found three shtarot. Well, my iriatlata, filu treinami. Then it could have given you a case of two shtarot. Together should be enough. If you're going to already give away how many were in there, then it could be two, right? And the chiddush is that they have to give you the siman, that they're rolled. Well, then it shouldn't matter two, three, right? It could be any amount. Which really means like this. Here, I'll finish up and then I'll explain. Elaka de amaravina tiva machriz hachanami shtare machriz. When you find coins on the ground, okay, again, we're going to see also it's a number of coins. And so what do? You announce, I found some coins. And then, right, this is depends how you find the coins. This is all the next mission. You can find them like sprawled on the street, then you don't have to announce. But if you find them in a pile, like a very neat pile, piled up in a particular way, then you announce, oh, I found coins. And then people have to say, how many coins were there and what formation were they in? So likewise here, you have to say, all you say is I found documents, and someone has to come forward and say, oh, it was three and it was rolled up, or it was five and it was rolled up. Now, what's the difference if they say two? Because if you say I found documents, what's the assumption? Documents means two. So he's already given away, right? The assumption is you need to bring both those simanim in order for it to be a good siman. And if you just say documents, well, that means two. And therefore, when the person comes forward and says two like this, well, then that you already gave away the two. And that's why two, you don't return. It's only once it's three, and then he can specify, you know, how many it was. Because the guy can't announce, I found a document. If he says, I found a document, and you say, well, I lost two, you're obviously talking about two different things. So you would have to say, I found documents, and then you say, oh, yeah, I lost three documents, and they were rolled up, and then you would get it. But if he just says documents and it's two, that's not good enough, because documents assumes two, and therefore you'd have to give these two simanim. It's not enough, just one. Okay. Ashbagomer. Echad alove mishlosha yachzir lelove. This is if you find one document, three, right, you have... one guy who borrowed from three different people, and they're all, right, you find them near each other, so the assumption is the lova dropped them. If you think they belong to the malva, so what were these things doing next to each other? So now they say, no, maybe you could. Dilma likiu minhu azle. Maybe this guy took out a loan from three different people, and what'd they do? They sent them. Now, what happens? After the court, you bring it to court, and the court verifies it. They would send it. This is interesting. They say they would send it to a scribe to basically verify the documents. He would write, this document is verified, or something like that. Till now, we kind of thought that the Beit Din had some sort of a stamp. Now we're seeing that sometimes there was an extra process. They went to the sofer. So maybe this guy borrowed money from three different people, right? He couldn't find one guy to give him all the money he needed. They all ended up in court at the same time, and the court sent them to the sofer, in which case they really belonged to the Malvim and not to the Lovim. So what do they say? Dimekaime, okay, meaning, oh no, we found, in order to return these to the Lova, they have to be already mikuyam al yadeh sofer. So they can't be that they were on their way to the sofer, right? Because, you know, if they were on their way to the sofer, then we'd worry. So now they say, oh, it's clear they weren't on the way to the sofer because they were already mikuyam by the sofer. They were already verified. So dilma miyadi desafer nafil, but maybe they got lost. Maybe the sofer sent them off with a shaliach to go deliver it to the malvin. So maybe it fell from there, and in which case they really might belong to the lenders. But now what do they say? An interesting, this is also right. We always have things about people's behavior. Lo mashe inish kiyume biyada desafra. No guy would leave his shtar halva'a, okay? No malva would leave it in the hands of the sofer. In other words, he doesn't trust that he's going to get it, right? Because what could happen, the shaliach could get it, it could fall, it could get lost. He's going to go straight directly to the sofer to get his shtar because he knows if this gets lost, he'll lose all his money. So therefore, there's no chance that these three malvim shtarot, who were all mikuyam, would have gotten, ended up, you know, getting lost from the sofer's hands. So therefore, we return it to the lova. Shlosha shalavu me'achad yachzir l'malveh. Now we're going to have a similar thing here. So again, three people borrowed from one guy. We find these three documents of IOUs that are all to one guy. We assume we return them to that guy. Right? What are they doing together if they belong to the lovim? So again, dilma lemechtivinu azle, diktiva betlatide, dilma lemechtivinu azle. Maybe they were going again to get the mikuyam by the sofer. So they say, no, we're not worried in this case because again, okay, last time we said it was already mikuyam, you don't have to worry about that. Here they're going to say, dilma dichtive b'tlat yad safra. Maybe they were written by three different sofrim, right? So in which case, it's obvious that the sofrim couldn't have, right, that it wasn't, right, that there were three different handwritings. So it couldn't be they all went to the same sofer. V'dilma l'kiuminu azle. Maybe they were going to be Mekayim the Shtarot to say, you know, there's a good Shtar. So now what do they say? Malve Mekayim Shtare, Lova Lo Mekayim Shtare. The Lova never goes to get the Shtar Mekuyam. He doesn't care if the, right? It's only the Malve that would have sent it. Im Yeshimahem Simponot, Yaseh Masheb Simponot. Right, so now this is if the Simpon, right, if it's written on the Shtar somewhere that you paid, then obviously we do what we assume whatever it says there is what happened. Amrav Yirmiya Bar Abba Amarav. Simpon hayotze mitachat yidei malve, af al pi shekatuv biktav yado, eino ela kemischak upasul. If the simpon is in the hands of the malve, he has this, it was paid, then even if it's written in his own hands, we're just assuming that he's playing around. That he didn't really mean to write that. Lo mebaye katuv biktav yad sofer, di'ika lememar safra itramele, bekatav, that maybe, that's not, if it was written in the hands of the sofer, so we could say maybe the sofer wrote it and it wasn't really the case. Ela afilu katub b'ktav yado pasul. Savar dilma mitrame. Sorry, one second. No. Right, sorry. The issue with the sofer is, right, lo ba'elanayim sofer di'ikalamayim safar itrimele, the katab. What's the story? The sofer wanted to have it accessible so that, right, I think this is so that he would buy it. And the sofers in general are known to kind of prepare things in advance, right? So the issue is, one second. Right. Itramele, that's what I forgot. Itramele means he accidentally, like maybe he bumped into the sofer, and while he was there, he asked him to write him this receipt so that it would be ready when the guy paid it. What's the issue here? The issue is that the guy wants his money back. Okay, now on the one hand, he doesn't want it to look like he got paid back, otherwise he's going to be stuck, right? He won't be able to get it paid. But on the other hand, he wants the lovet to pay him back the money. And what's his concern? Maybe one day the lova will come and say, here, I've got the money. Now write me a receipt. He'll have to go schlep to a sofer. By that point, the lova will be, oh, forget it. The lova might say, I'll give this to you as long as you hand me a receipt right now, I'll give you the money. So what does he do? He bumps into a sofer. He says, you know what? Prepare me this thing that says paid. So that, right, it's so interesting to think about, right? For us, it's so obvious that we could just write the word paid. Right? For them, you know, they needed a sofer to do it. Most people didn't write. So they, you know, they would have a sofer ready, write it up already, so that when the lov is ready to pay, he'll give him the shtar, right? The whole thing is, when you find this in the hands of the malveh, the assumption is it wasn't really paid, because if it was paid, it would be in the hands of the lov. So therefore, we're worried that maybe he bumped into him. Okay, so then they say, that obviously, right, we're not concerned that it's really accurate, or we're dafka concerned that it's not valid. Ela afilu katu b'ktav yado pasul, why? Savar dilma mitrame va'ate ben ashmasho v'kaparili. Dilo yahivnale lo yaiv lizuze. What does he say? He says, maybe I'm going to bump into the love, a ben ashmasho, what are we talking about, obviously, Erev Shabbat, and the guy wants to pay me back. And what does he say? Dilo yahivnale, right? If I don't give him the money, the shovar, lo yaiv lizuze. He's not going to do it. So what does he do? Ech tov ana, I'm going to write it now, so that I'm prepared. So I'll be totally prepared. So therefore, we assume if we find in the malva's hands it says paid, we still don't assume that it was actually paid. Because again, what would he be doing with the shtar? So now they say, but wait a minute. What did it say in our Mishnah? So that contradicts our Mishnah. Right? This halacha goes directly against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, if we find the shtar and it has the simpon, then we assume that we do what it says. So what do they say? Kada amar of safra shenimtza ben shtarot kruim. Hachanami shemitzao ben shtarot kruim. So Rav Safra says in a different place that when you find it in the middle of a bunch of ripped documents, then we assume that it's, right, then we would say it's not, I'd assume we're going to say, right, hashavar yotzala ben shtarot kruim. Right, so Rashi says it's between his ripped shtarot, v'hu eino karua, and this one isn't ripped. That you find it in a pile of ripped, invalid shtarot, but this one's not ripped, and therefore you rely on it, and it shows that it's true. Shim lo nifra lo haya noten lo ashtar etchal shtarot kruim. Right, because if it wasn't paid back, he wouldn't put it there. V'li nir'eh. Right, I think there's two different interpretations. One second. One second. I just want to double check this. Right. If he was really leaving it, like we thought, that he was leaving it to use in the event that the lova comes, he wouldn't have put it in like a discarded pile. Okay, like a shtarot kruim is like, you leave things to shred, let's say. Okay, so, right, people who shred documents, it was like in a pile of stuff to shred. So if that's the case, then we assume it was actually paid. Because if he was leaving it so that he'd have it accessible for whenever the lover comes and he'd say, oh, here's your shtar, what do we assume happened? He paid. And then the guy just trusted the guy and he said, oh, I don't need to take a receipt, right? How many times do you not take a receipt for something? You figure, I'm not going to need this receipt. So you just leave it there. So that's what we're saying. Okay, so that's why it ended up in the hands of the malva, and the malva left it in a discard pile. But if you find it not with this ripped stuff, but with his important documents, then we assume it's still a halva'ah, it's still a loan, it wasn't payback, and he's just ready for the day the guy's going to come to pay back the money. Okay, Tashma, another question. Nimtza le'echad ben shtarotav, shtaro shel Yosef ben Shimon, parua. Parua, shtarot shnehem pruim. Right, okay, so if you find with among your shtarot, says shtaro shel Yosef ben Shimon parua. Says the shtar of Yosef ben Shimon is parua. What do we know about Yosef ben Shimon? He's the guy who there's always more than one of. Okay, so let's say you had two guys who borrowed from you. His names were Yosef ben Shimon, and you have a shtar that says Yosef ben Shimon's shtar is parua. So shtarot shnehem pruim. Okay, neither, right? You can't demand the money from either because again hamotzi mechaver ala paraya. So again, what do we do? Don't we say the simpon is good? So we say kedam rav safra shenimtza ben shtarot kruim hachanami shenimtza ben shtarot kruim. In other words, again, you don't have to worry, right? It depends where you find it, okay? Tashma, shvua, another potential question. Shvua shelo pakadnu abba, shelo amar lanu abba. Okay, a guy comes to pay back a loan, to collect a loan from the guy died, right, from the heirs. He goes to the yorshim, and they say, shvua shelo pakadnu abba, we swear that our father said he didn't, right, he didn't tell us when he died that, right, I'm trying to remember which side this is, right, that they're trying to collect the money, so he didn't tell us that he had a loan out. I think that's what it is. Just double check.
They're looking to get paid.
Oh, they're the ones who were looking to get paid. So they say...
It says that he had been paid.
Right, that he had been paid. Thank you. Okay, so they say... Right, so we swear that our... I think it's Yatomim... This is when Yatomim are trying to collect a loan from other Yatomim. Okay? So the ones who are trying to collect the loan say, we swear that our... Because there's a concept, we learned this in Ketubot and Gitin also, that you... You can't demand money from Yatomim unless you swear. So now these guys are swearing, though. Now there's two sides. So the guys who the father took the, you know, lent the money have to swear. Our father didn't tell us that it was collected. The shelo amar lanu abba, and he didn't, right, lo pakadnu, he didn't tell us when he died, and he didn't tell us when he was still alive. The shelo matzanu ben shtarotav shel abba sheshar zeh parua. And we didn't find among his shtarot that this was collected. So Amar of Safra, again, right, we have this whole distinction, right? If you found the shtar among the father that he was paid, that wouldn't tell you anything, because what did we say, right? Maybe he was just preparing it. So again, Amar of Safra, shenim saben shtarotav kru'in, right? In other words, it was that they didn't find it in this discard pile, which would mean that it was already paid. Okay, last one. Tashma, simpon sheyesh lav edim yitkayem b'chotamav. So what about this, right? What did we say? If it has edim, then the signature should be sufficient. So ema yitkayem michotamav d'shaylinan lehu l'sa'ade I parua I lo parua. Now we're going to learn that the fact that it's signed isn't enough. You need to have it. Edim come and say this is like the Ede Chatim and the Ede Mesira. Because yes, you signed it saying this shtar is valid, but the guy says, you know, it was paid, but it doesn't mean, just because the edim were signed doesn't mean anything. It's the edim who saw that it was actually paid. That's what's important. Okay? Do you want to go on a drop more? Finish up the perek. Okay. Tashma simpon sheyesh lav edim kasher. My edim. So again, simpon sheyesh lav edim. It says kasher. So didn't we just say it's not enough? So my edim ede kiyum. Okay. There's a difference between edim who sign and edim who are say, oh, we're mekayim the fact that this actually happened. Hachinami mistabra midikatani seifa says in the seifa there v'she'ein alav edim pasul. So my ain alav edim. What does it mean? If it doesn't have edim on it, it's pasul. What do you mean? Obviously, it's pasul if it doesn't have edim. A star that has those signatures on it is obviously pasul, right? My ain alav edim. Elam adaleka aluya edim klal tzricha lememer de pasul. Right? If it doesn't have edim, obviously it's you don't need to say it's pasul. El alav edikum. Okay. Now we're showing that this proves that the distinction between Edim who signed that the star is a valid star, or Edim that signed that the act that we're talking about actually happened. It's a very strange distinction, because what are the Edim, right, that are signing on it if they're not Edekium? We're now learning that there could be two potential signatures. Edim who signed that are saying, well, the Mava told me to sign here, you know, he said that this was paid, let's say, even though, right, now what does he want? He wants to hand the guy a document that has Edim on it that says it was paid, so he prepares it earlier. The guys verify that the Malva wants this, but then Ede Kiyum are the ones who come later to say, oh, we can be Mekayim that these signatures are valid. This act actually happened. Okay? Gufa. Now we're going to go back and understand this a little better, this brighter we just said. Simpon sheyesh alav edim yikayim b'chotamav, ein alav edim v'yotzei mitachat yidei shalish. Okay, this again, right? Either it has edim, or it doesn't have witnesses that verify that this happened, but we find it in the hands of a middleman. Or if we have a star, it says IOU, and after the signatures at the bottom of the star, they sign, right, they wrote, it was paid, kasher. Okay, then this is good. So yotzei mitachat yidei shalish, why do we believe it when the shalish says it? The shalish says, you know, this was, let's say the shalish says, this was paid half and not paid, you know, the other half wasn't paid. So why do we do this? Because the malva believed the shalish, right? The malva gave the shalish his shtar. So whatever the shalish says, we believe him because, right, the case we saw before with the shalish was the shalish didn't remember. But if the shalish says something, we trust him 100%, right? You don't need, let's say, two witnesses here. Because the shalish is significant enough because the malva trusted the shalish to give him the document. And therefore, if the shalish says it was already half paid and you only owe it half, then we believe the shalish because the malva himself believed him. Yotzei l'achar chitum shtarot, nami, de'i lav de'pari alo hava mari le'lishtari. He never would have ruined this shtar if he hadn't paid back, if it hadn't gotten paid back. Because what would the malva be doing ruining his shtar? Okay? Tov, hajra l'achshayim ochzin. Tomorrow, we'll learn together, but you'll start Eilu Mitziyot, and we'll try to do a little catch-up when we start where we are, when we start on Kaf Bet. We'll do a little bit of background from Kaf Aleph on Tuesday. Okay.